The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy. Doctors disagree about lice remedies. My pediatrician confirmed my suspicions that my daughter had lice. Needless to say, I was upset. She will soon be heading for camp, and I did not want her to suffer the humiliation of being diagnosed there or spreading lice to other kids. The pediatrician warned me that lice have developed resistance to chemicals in lice shampoos. Instead, she recommended slathering mayonnaise on my daughter's hair. We tried this technique and covered her head with a shower cap for a few hours. Excuse me. Then I carefully combed her hair, rinsed and shampooed. Three treatments a few days apart solved the problem. Answer: there are an amazing number of home remedies for lice. Many involve the suffocation approach, with things such as mayo, olive oil, mineral oil, petroleum jelly, Cetaphil cleanser, amber listerine, and dimethicones. And that's cited in the German journal Deutsches Arztblatt International online November 11, 2016. But an article in Pediatric Dermatology September 2016 states that home remedies such as mayonnaise and essential oils have not demonstrated to be safe and effective and may carry potential for severe adverse events. On the other hand, an article in the journal PLOS One, PLOS One, online June 10th, 2016, reported that a mineral oil shampoo was highly effective. Public health nurses always remind us that coming out nits or lice eggs is essential for a successful cure. Question: I am a physician, but traditional medicine has let me down. Knee surgery has not helped my sore knees. Neither have stem cell injections. I have tried oil supplements without much success. Any suggestions? Answer: have you considered a topical non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, or NSAID, such as diclofenac gel? It should be less likely to cause systemic side effects than oral drugs like ibuprofen or naproxen. Even though you have not had success with supplements, have you tried turmeric or curcumin, ashwagandha, boswellia, ginger, MSM, SAME, tart cherry juice, or pineapple? We recognize that you want some scientific support for such alternative approaches. You will find it and more details in our e-guide to alternatives for arthritis. Look in the health guide section of www.peoplespharmacy.com. Patient uses flaxseed for nail separation. Question: I gave my husband 1,200 milligrams of flaxseed daily for his general health. Several months later, we were very surprised to notice that his fingernails, which had been separated from their nail beds for over 25 years due to a psoriatic condition, had mended entirely. Is this a known remedy? Answer: you may have stumbled onto something unique. We searched the medical literature and could find nothing linking flaxseed, which is Linum usitacium, in the treatment of psoriasis. There is evidence, though, that ground flaxseed or flaxseed oil has anti-inflammatory properties, cited in the Journal of Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine, October 2017. One small study in the journal Skin Pharmacology and Physiology online, November 18, 2011, reported that supplementation with flaxseed oil led to decreases in skin sensitivity, roughness, and scaling. We won't know whether flaxseed supplementation would translate into symptom improvements for people with psoriasis until a clinical trial is conducted. Question. I am trying to find out how to purchase German Sambuca, it's spelled S-A-M-B-U-C-H-A, extra strength cough medicine. It is the only thing that helped me when I was in Germany. I can't find it anymore. Answer. Your question threw us for a loop. We searched high and low for Sambuca and came up with a blank. There is something called Sambuca. It is an Italian liqueur. It is sweet and tastes a lot like licorice. We're pretty sure that is not what you are inquiring about. Kombucha, K-O-M-B-U-C-H-A, is a fermented tea beverage. It is made by using a yeast and bacteria culture. We doubt that is what you are seeking either. We suspect you're looking for the ingredient Sambucus nigra or Sambucus canadensis. These natural ingredients are known by the common name elderberry. There's evidence that elderberry extract has activity against viruses that cause both influenza and colds, cited in the Journal of Functional Foods, March 2017, and the BMC Complementary and Alternative Medicine, February 25, 2011. There are lots of Sambucus or elderberry products available in health food stores, pharmacies, and online. You can find capsules, syrups, gummies, and lozenges. They may not mirror the German cough medicine you are seeking, but they may be helpful nevertheless. Despite concerns, don't skip sunscreen, from the New York Times. Skin cancer is the most common malignancy in the U.S., affecting more than 3 million people each year. Using sunscreen is one mainstay of prevention, but news that sunscreen ingredients can soak into the bloodstream have caused concern. Later this year, the Food and Drug Administration will offer official guidance on the safety of such ingredients. What should people do in the interim as the summer approaches? The only proven health risk so far is too much sun exposure. Yes, you should probably keep using sunscreen, although some who may want to play it extra safe could switch to sunscreens that contain zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. Sunscreens were first regulated by the FDA in the 1970s and were considered over-the-counter medications before the U.S. guidelines for the evaluation of drugs were put into place. Because of this, sunscreens didn't undergo testing the way modern pharmaceuticals would. The FDA, however, has wanted to know, to what degree are chemicals applied to the skin absorbed in the body, and what are possible effects of those chemicals? We now have information about the first question. A few weeks ago, a study published in JAMA that randomly assigned 24 healthy people to one of four sunscreens. Two were sprays, the third was a lotion, and the fourth was a cream. Participants were instructed to apply the sunscreens to 75% of their bodies 4 times a day for 4 days, and 30 blood samples were drawn over a week. The FDA's guidance says any active ingredient that achieves a systemic absorption greater than 0.5 nanograms per milliliter of blood should undergo a toxicology assessment to see if it causes cancer, birth defects, or other adverse effects. The study examined four common sunscreen components, avobenzone, oxybenzone, octocrylene, and eccamsule. For all four, systemic concentrations passed the nanogram threshold after the applications on the first day of the study. The levels were higher than the limit for the entire week for all products except the cream. They increased from day one to day four, meaning there was accumulation of the chemical in the body with continued use. This is not evidence sunscreens are harmful. It's entirely possible that the amounts absorbed are safe, but this doesn't mean the effects of absorption shouldn't be checked. For now, the proposed rule suggests that sunscreens with para-aminobenzoic acid and associated with allergies and trolamine salicylate and association with bleeding should not be given the designation generally regarded as safe and effective. The rule also proposes sunscreens that rely on zinc oxide and or titanium dioxide should be generally regarded as safe and effective. These inorganic compounds are not absorbed into the body and sit on the skin reflecting or absorbing the sun's harmful rays. From the Costco connection, weak in the knees. The largest joint in the body, the knee, is susceptible to aging, overuse, and injury. Knee pain keeps many people from doing the activities they enjoy, but what causes knee pain? More important, how do you make those knee aches and pains go away? The knee, the body's largest joint, is a hinge joint where three bones meet, the thigh bone or femur, the shin bone or tibia, and the kneecap bone or patella. In a healthy individual, cartilage protects these bones where they meet. But as a result of aging and overuse, the cartilage can wear down, which results in osteoarthritis, a condition that affects 18% of women and 10% of men aged 60 or older, according to the World Health Organization. Listen to your body. Pain is a warning signal, says Eric Wichemans, a physical therapist in private practice in Virginia Beach, Virginia. You need to listen to your body. He blames much of the high incidence of knee problems on boomeritis, a term coined by Dr. Nicholas DeNubal, an orthopedic surgeon at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania, which refers to baby boomers' tendency to overdo exercise. As you age, it's important to choose activities that don't involve repetitive steps and pounding the pavement. We're taught to push ourselves, but the old saying, no pain, no gain, is out. When it hurts, don't do it. Besides overuse, causes of knee pain include mechanical problems like muscle imbalance or a loose piece of cartilage in the joint, and knee injuries from torn ligaments to meniscal tears. Athletes are especially prone to these injuries, which are caused by twisting the knee and by sudden starts and stops. Sometimes knee pain can be related to problems elsewhere in your body, says pain specialist Dr. Lisa Barr, who's the author of Outsmart Your Pain. Osteoarthritis of the hip, even ankle injuries, can present as knee pain, she notes. That's called referred pain, and it's more common than people realize. A sedentary lifestyle is another reason people have knee issues. Lack of exercise means joints get stiff and lose their flexibility, Barr explains. Obesity and an inflammatory diet exacerbate the problem. Treating knee pain. Recent headlines touting the dangers of opioid addiction are making people think twice about grabbing that prescription bottle. Besides, according to Wichemans, taking pain medication only covers up the problem but doesn't fix it. A specialist can help uncover the root of your knee pain, he notes. Once the cause of knee pain is determined, your care provider will discuss a treatment plan with you. This often involves lifestyle and dietary changes, as well as exercises tailored to your age and activity level. For osteoarthritis issues, Barr says corticosteroid and viscosupplementation injections can help reduce pain for 6 months or longer. For people who are interested in regenerative medicine, injecting PRP, which is platelet-rich plasma, is very, very effective and can last quite a long time, she says. This treatment helps to regenerate tissues from within. Barr recommends aquatic therapy and cross-training to help improve muscle balance, especially for people recovering from an injury or surgery. Everything is about the balance of power, she says. How our muscles work together is key to optimal joint function. In addition to exercise programs and injections, options for treating knee pain include acupuncture, cupping, dry needling, and dietary changes. Rest, elevation, compression, and ice can also help. Barr often prescribes supplements such as turmeric and fish oil for her patients, as well as adaptogens, or herbs and roots, that are marketed as helping the body resist physical, chemical, or biological stressors. Barr and Wichemans agree that surgery should be considered only after conservative care has failed. Footwork, also from the Costco connection, maintaining a steady foundation helps the entire body. Your feet are the foundation of your body. when your feet hurt. It can affect muscles, bones, joints, and nerves and other parts of the body. Causing knee pain, back pain, and even headaches. According to the Orthopedic Foot and Ankle Society, there should be no pain to the average foot. And yet, 8 out of 10 Americans surveyed say they have experienced foot pain from trauma, disease, or poorly fitting footwear. Bunions, heel pain, toenail issues, and diabetes-related foot injuries are among the foot ailments podiatrists see most, if the shoe fits. More foot pain is caused by improper shoes, not necessarily poor-fitting shoes, says podiatrist James Mahoney, professor of podiatric medicine and surgery at the College of Podiatric Medicine and Surgery at Des Moines University in Des Moines, Iowa. Flip-flop sandals without arch support and athletic shoes that do not have enough support to maintain prolonged physical activity are the common culprits. Mahoney recommends choosing shoes that bend only from the toes or behind the toes. He recommends choosing shoes that bend only behind the toes. To be sure you are getting the right fit, put on socks, rest your feet on a piece of paper, and trace your foot. Cut out this model and make sure it fits inside your shoes without wrinkles or gaps. Bunions. If you have a bunion, you probably have your family to thank for it, as this bony bulge at the base of the big toe is usually inherited. Poor-fitting shoes aggravate symptoms but are rarely the primary cause, says podiatrist Michael Treppel, professor of surgery, dean, and vice president for academic affairs at New York College of Podiatric Medicine in Manhattan. Wearing shoes with a boxy toe and taking over the counter and anti-inflammatories can help. While toe spacers and inserts won't fix the bunion, they can ease pain, podiatrist Rock Pasentano, director of the non-surgical foot and ankle service at Hospital for Special Surgery Manhattan, says toe spacers can also stretch tiny muscles in the toes in front of the foot, which may prevent foot cramps. Surgery for bunions should be a last resort. Heel pain, plantar fasciitis, an inflammation of the ligament that runs along the bottom of the foot from the heel to the base of the toes, is a common form of heel pain. It can range from an ache to intense pain in your heel, up the arch of the foot, and beyond. Studies have shown that stretching exercises help patients with plantar fasciitis. These exercises include sitting barefoot, grasping the toes and gently pulling them toward the shin so you feel a stretch in your arch. You can also make your arch muscles stronger every day by grabbing a washcloth on the floor with your toes and dragging it toward you a few times. Rest, ice, and over-the-counter anti-inflammatory medicines may also help. Toenails. Thick yellow toenails may signal a fungus, which can be treated with over-the-counter topical medications, but may sometimes warrant a trip to the doctor for oral antifungal medications. Painful ingrown toenails can be remedied in a doctor's office and prevented by trimming toenails straight across. See a doctor for any injury to the toenail that involves increasing redness, swelling, pus, or fever. Diabetes-related foot injuries. When diabetes isn't well managed, the nerves in the feet can become damaged, and you may not feel cuts, burns, or sores, which can become infected. Patients with diabetes and peripheral vascular disease are at particular risk for foot-related complications and should receive regular professional foot exams and be instructed in self-inspection. Footnotes. As you age, keeping your feet healthy can improve your mobility and balance, minimizing your risk of taking a fall. Podiatrist James Mahoney suggests bathing or soaking feet daily in a warm, soapy water solution, drying well between toes, and placing a mirror on the floor to examine the bottom of your feet for discoloration or any small sores that may be developing. He also recommends buying shoes that have extra depth to accommodate padded insoles or custom orthotics, as well as avoiding nylons. which may not allow the feet to breathe, and can also put unnecessary pressure on the toes if they're too tight. From the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, ovarian cancer, update on therapy. The initial treatment of ovarian cancer is effective and usually leads to disease remission. Despite this, the average survival rate 5 years after diagnosis is only 45%. Curing or managing ovarian cancer is often difficult for two reasons. There's no reliable way to detect ovarian cancer in its earlier stages when treatment is often successful. In addition, for the 75% of women with later stage ovarian cancer that has spread, successful initial treatment is often followed by a relapse that's more difficult to treat. Doctors and researchers are working hard to improve the odds for the roughly 22,000 U.S. women and the estimated 250,000 women worldwide who are diagnosed with ovarian cancer each year. Numerous gains have been made in recent years. The search for effective early detection options and new ways to minimize recurrence is in high gear, with promising new options emerging. There's optimism that current research and clinical trials will lead to increased cure rates and longer stretches of cancer-free remission and stabilization and containment of the cancer, so that women who have the disease can lead as reasonably normal lives. Early detection. Symptoms of ovarian cancer often don't occur in the earlier stages of the disease, so the cancer often progresses without detection. When symptoms do occur, they can be vague and easy to chalk up to other more common problems. Symptoms may include abdominal discomfort or vague pain, urinary frequency or urgency, a feeling of fullness even after a light meal, bloating, persistent indigestion, gas, nausea, or other changes in bowel or bladder habits. Still, symptoms can sometimes lead to early diagnosis, and it's important to give prompt attention to any of the symptoms above that have started fairly recently, have changed recently, or recur. A major goal of doctors and researchers is the development of an ovarian cancer screening test to detect it in its early stages. The drawback existing tests is that they're only partially reliable at detecting ovarian cancer. For women at low risk of ovarian cancer, these tests result in many false positives, meaning many women without ovarian cancer undergo follow-up testing or even surgery, and the tests don't appear to reduce the risk of death from ovarian cancer. Some doctors follow a screening schedule with women at higher risk of ovarian cancer using periodic blood tests to measure a tumor marker, cancer antigen 125, pelvic exams, and a vaginal ultrasound probe to better visualize the ovaries. However, this schedule applies only to women who have not had their ovaries removed as a cancer preventative measure, which is common in women at high risk of ovarian cancer. Researchers are looking into various genetic alterations, tumor-related proteins, and other biomarkers that are detectable in the blood to assess whether one or combination of markers can more reliably detect ovarian cancer in its earlier stages. Cancer-removing surgery. For most women with ovarian cancer, the first step in treatment is an accurate diagnosis of the type of cancer and determination of the extent of its spread or staging. This helps guide the next step, which is typically surgery to locate and remove tumors in the abdominal area or beyond. Research has shown that it's best to see a cancer surgeon specializing in gynecological cancers early in the diagnostic phase of care. One of the more important aspects of improved survival is accurate staging and surgery to remove the maximal amount of visible cancer. This is very different from many other types of cancer, in which spread beyond the primary organ often means there aren't any good surgical options. Gynecological cancer specialists are more likely to accurately stage and optimally remove cancer than are non-specialists, and the better this is performed, the longer the person is likely to survive. Removing advanced cancer can be a prolonged and arduous surgical procedure. So the risks of surgery need to be weighed against the benefits for older women. There may be doubts as to whether a maximum surgical approach to an older woman is reasonably safe. While research has shown that age does increase risk of surgical complications, it also appears that age alone generally is not a reason to withhold maximal initial surgery. A specialist will know best which older women will benefit most from maximal cancer removal and how to identify women for whom alternative or alternate treatment options offer a better risk-to-benefit balance than does maximal surgery. Sometimes initial rounds of chemotherapy are used to shrink the amount of cancer prior to surgery to remove the cancer. This is an important option to consider in older women and in women who have extensive disease. Using chemotherapy to shrink tumors before surgery may make the surgery less arduous. Additional options: about 3 to 4 weeks after surgery, most women with ovarian cancer receive chemotherapy to further eradicate cancer cells. The initial chemotherapy treatment typically includes a combination of platinum and taxane-based drugs. Most women respond very well to this combination of chemotherapy, and the cancer goes into remission. In addition to chemotherapy by infusion into a vein, infusing rounds of chemotherapy directly into the abdomen is an approach that's sometimes added as an attempt to improve the effectiveness of treatment. Optimal candidates include women who have had maximal surgical removal of ovarian cancer with no visible tumors or only small areas of residual disease. Avastin. Consideration may be given to adding a drug such as Avastin that inhibits the blood vessel growth that cancer cells need to thrive. It can help shrink tumors and delay cancer progression, but it's not yet known to improve survival and cause increased side effects. Poly-ADP ribose, or polymerase inhibitors, also called PARP, P-A-R-P inhibitors, are primarily used to treat cancer that's recurred. But one PARP inhibitor, Lynparza, is used as a maintenance therapy to reduce recurrence. They block the pathway that cancer cells use to repair their own damaged DNA. When cancer returns, ovarian cancer commonly returns. Not all women respond well to chemotherapy. When cancer returns within 6 months of chemotherapy completion, the cancer is considered resistant. And we'll continue this next week, but right now we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen to the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman for the reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.